Greetings, this is Ereski Daoud of Mayor Risk LLC, and today is the 17th of December 2018. I am speaking with my good colleague Alessandro Bruno on how the Libyan crisis is likely to continue well into 2019.
I am in front of the database of incidents that our analysts capture from the region, and there's a lot going on. There's been a lot going on in November and December, which, if in terms of terror activity, in terms of security, in terms of instability, it's very much the same that we've seen since 2011. It's really not much of a major
development. Nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. November violence seems to have claimed seven people. In Libya, 500 injured, according to several reports. I think it's a UN report. I'm seeing terror activities in places from Ajdabiya to Benghazi to Sirte, Jufra. There's been kidnapping of Egyptian workers in Tripoli. Then they were released 4 days later. In Homs, local tourists killed. In Wadi Qam, there's been some IS activity in the southern part of the country, Sabrata. There's been some anti-IS.
That's one of the most dangerous things.
That's right. And if you look at if you look at what's happening in the south, is probably not so different in many aspects. In Algeria, which is the neighboring country there, which at least in southern Algeria is there's a lot of sub-Saharan migrants moving from the south to the north, and that's probably not so different in Libya, even though Libya is much more security and defense. So in addition to what I talked about, security and defense extends to AFRICOM activity. I'm seeing headlines here. AFRICOM hits Aqim, Al-Qaeda in or around Kufra, killing 11 people. Suspected to be Al-Qaeda members. So again, I think in a nutshell, really, without getting too much into the details, it's the same thing that we've seen since 2011. And I wonder, from your understanding of following that space, has there been any fatigue from the international community in terms of following what's going on in Libya? Or is there still a lot of interest?
There has been fatigue in the sense, I think people have gotten so used to things not changing in Libya that certainly the average media does not report much. However, there was an intensification of attention, and in November, when Italy hosted the Libya conference in Palermo, which was attended at least briefly by all major political actors in Libya right now, because it remains, which is the government is split in two. There's a government in Benghazi and a government in Tripoli, each with its own international backers. And essentially, democratic Libya is not yet a reality. Nothing has really changed politically since 2011. There is no. It's difficult to. I still don't understand how it works with the two governments. There is no official split. So the situation remains. There may be UN special envoy for Libya. Suggested June or July. Mm-hmm. We'll see if such a thing even gets close.
You did
even if they do.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, sorry. Even if they do go ahead, I still we've had elections before and a group which have been promptly broken. So there's no guarantee.
Well, I could. You know, you said in earlier that you don't know how this is working. I can tell you right now. It just and any efforts from any foreign country to try to broker a deal, including, for example, an election, an upcoming election, is just it's not going to work. Let's be realistic. I think the French tried it, and we were supposed to work. Let's be realistic. I think the French tried it, and we were supposed to have an election this December. Nothing happened.
That's right.
The Italians.
I can't believe. Yeah. No, I was just saying, I can't believe that President Macron was thinking of fixing things in Libya when he's got his own problem.
Absolutely, and that's the, and that's the drama of what many of these partners are trying to do, or many of these neighboring countries are trying to do. I don't think they fully understand, but maybe they do. But I don't think they fully. acknowledge the gist and the center of the problems in Libya. There are various power elements that are fighting each other, but that are being totally manipulated, extended to Turkey far away. Obviously, the southern Europeans have their fingers. The Americans do. The Russians undoubtedly have something to do as well. So I think...
Sure.
I think assuming that the Libyans on their own, can make it happen, in my opinion, and you might have a completely different opinion, and I respect that, but assuming that the Libyans on their own could sit down and make peace is kind of being naive about sort of the reality. On the ground.
Yes, it's not necessarily the Libyans' fault, however, because this mess in Libya was brought on, after all, by international forces. So these international forces had different interests at the time. It looks like the rumors, substantiated rumors, suggest that President Sarkozy at the time had his own personal reasons, not even French national reasons, but personal ones, for getting rid of Gaddafi at the time. There was a story of a $50 million loan given to him by Gaddafi, and he, oddly enough, he was very enthusiastic about launching attacks, and in March of 2000, or maybe even as early as February. Now that is still in the cloud of rumors, but certainly there has been too much foreign interference. Also, I think Libya itself is an international creation, because Libya was three separate provinces until Mussolini decided to combine all of them into one jurisdiction called Libya, which is the ancient Roman name for it was known as Libya. Mm-hmm. So, and Mussolini, in dream to revive the Roman Empire, decided to bring those two units together. Interestingly enough, the tensions between the East and the West, Cyrenaica and Tripolitania, were as deep then as they are now. After the brief period of the kingdom, Gaddafi was the only one able to bring those two together. Now, not necessarily successfully, but he managed to create some kind of glue that kept it together, which left the tribes very strong, overly strong, and when he was gone, these tribes was no the glue melted, and so any election has to deal with this fundamental problem. Libya remains a tribal state in at heart, and no government is going to function until that problem.
It's so what you're talking about is really tribalism tends to dominate. And so what's your thought of a concept of federalism? And I've always been a you know a proponent of such idea, but looking at the politics in Libya, it might be a very difficult thing to achieve. Federalism along the lines of regionalism would work, or any way of looking at it.
Federalism, I think, is tough. Is Libya's sole bread and butter, oil. The concentration of oil is in the, of the resources is in the east. The production facilities are in the west. We have a Sudan situation here, so it's either one. In that case, a federal arrangement would only encourage complete separation. So the situation wouldn't change much. That's why I think these elections are so difficult until this issue is so thorny. Oil thorny. Oil, if oil, then if oil, if Libya had more resources than oil, if Libya were Tunisia, I think the situation would be much different. Some kind of agreement possible, because they would find strength in unity. They would find strength in unity. But in Cyrenaica has all the natural strength and resource strength, and Tripolitania needs Cyrenaica, and the Europeans need Libyan oil because it's cheaper to refine, and less pollution, easy to carry. There could be pipelines to Europe, so the is a victim of its own natural gift.
All right, let's talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about the main. All right, let's talk a little bit, if you don't mind, about the main stakeholders in this. I think it becomes evident that the Europeans, the French and the Italians in particular, are key stakeholders in this affair, for a number of reasons. Proximity. I mean, that's a that's in is a doorsteps, if you will. And so it's kind of it's very difficult for a for Italy to ignore Libya, on the ground that it its oil company Eni is knee deep in Libyan oil sector, completely,
Yeah,
absolutely.
forever. And actually, the Libya is a former Italian colony. It's the only former Italian
That's
colony.
right.
Well, there's also Somalia
That's right. That's
and
right.
Eritrea. But there are close cultural. There is despite Gaddafi's anti-imperialism, there were always close ties
Yes, absolutely.
between the two countries.
Yes, absolutely. And so that's one. There's also the Italian problem with immigration. That's an issue.
Completely.
I mean, how do you how you know if you put yourself in in Macron's shoes, what do you see the French interest? Of course, there's some level of proximity as well. Not as direct as the Italians, but apart from that, what but apart from that, what is the French angle?
Well, the French angle is Total, so it is there is a Total versus Eni game going on. Total being France's state oil company, but I have a feeling that the approach, President Macron will find more congruence with the Italian situation, because he's being urged to stop migration, and in that. Before, he wasn't as enthusiastic in endorsing the Italian positions and concerns. I think Italy might find more sympathetic ears now at the European Union Commission about the migration problem. And France could help because much of the migration goes through French colonies. It starts in French colonies, and I'm talking Niger, of course,
Sure.
which is the real main crossroads for all the migrants coming through from West Africa in particular, these colonies, with one or two exceptions. So I think there is some convergence there. There might be more a few months. So from that perspective, and also Italy, Salvini's tough measures have curbed migration considerably in 2000, the latter half of 2018. We've seen a huge drop in migrants. Now the main point of entry now is illegal entry is Spain, and that's another matter because Spain maintains territory in North Africa, at Ceuta and Melilla in Morocco. So, and also I believe Algeria is becoming another. Is growing, and also I believe Algeria is becoming another is growing as an avenue.
Yes, Algeria. I mean, the entire region.
So,
Look, the entire region from the entire North African coastline, all the way to Egypt, including Egypt, certainly are originators of illegal originators of illegal migrant crossings, and that's a big problem. But I think going back to the French, I think the French may have started with the fact that Gaddafi allegedly sponsored some the political campaign of Sarkozy, and that kind of started the French campaign against Libya, and there has been a growing influence of the so-called hawks in the French government, who wanted and still do want to project the new power of France through military interventions in former colonies in the Middle East, in selling more military equipment to Egypt, for example, billions of dollar contracts. Having some presence in Libya, certainly a major presence in the Sahel region. I think the hawks, certainly after 2011, are maybe quickly learning what the American hawks, the debacle of the American hawks in Iraq, that there is a cost to excessive interventionism. I don't even know if the proper word, but I'll say it anyway. Interventionism. I don't even know if the proper word, but I'll say it anyway. There's a cost to
No,
it.
there's definitely, there's a cost. And well, funny enough, I don't know if they've learned a lesson yet, because in Niger, they're increasing their military presence, both the Americans and the French. And actually, they were supposed to control, to help mitigate the migration problem. And I believe France vetoed the Italian intervention, the Italian contingent.
It's interesting because it's
So
at a time where the
the
French were looking for a global support on this, trying to get the UN for a global support on this, trying to get the UN
yeah, but not
to.
it, but not Italy, because Total any interests come into play at that point. They're vying each other for various, not just in Libya, but other areas of North. And also, I think France is one of the reasons it's supporting Haftar in Benghazi is because Egypt is Haftar's big ally, and France has definitely been targeting huge Egyptian military contracts. I think it sold Egypt its prestigious Rafale contracts. I think it sold Egypt its prestigious Rafale jet fighter, which what is what it's exclusive. I don't think it was even designed with export in mind. So certainly not to Egypt. Certainly not to Egypt. The French military industry is definitely one of the factors behind this.
Okay, so I think we got the Italian and the French motives behind, they don't seem to have an end game. I mean, it's sort of the political statements that we want peace and stable government, but how do you achieve that when everybody supports different types of players in the region? What's the motives of the Gulf countries, starting perhaps with Qatar, the infamous Qatar.
Yeah, well, Qatar is a big supporter, very close to the Muslim Brotherhood, and one of the elements sustaining the government in Tripoli today, the Al-Sarraj government, is the Muslim Brotherhood. Mm. It has it's one of the few governments left with the Muslim Brotherhood in such a position. So Qatar is going to be reluctant to stop influence there. The other big party involved, of course, with Muslim Brotherhood accents is Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Saudi Arabia supporting Haftar. And if you remember Saudi Arabia, all relations with Qatar in the summer of 2017.
Yes, absolutely.
That tension, although it seemed to be easing, is still there.
Yes. So the scenario is the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Your enemy is my friend. Yes.
Whereby you have basically Qatar and Turkey coalescing to support the Muslim Brotherhood via Tripoli,
yeah.
And Saudi Arabia and Egypt conspiring to support their nemesis, Haftar, in general. I mean, I understand Egypt. I mean, clearly there's an enormous border separating the two countries, and it's a vast desert.
Yes.
Once you get into, once you cross Libya into Egypt, it's a no man's land, and I know there's been a lot of interceptions of militant groups with weapons and fights with the Egyptian military. So Egypt is, there's the inevitability of Egypt's involvement, but the siding with Haftar is an interesting one. But it's of Egypt, but it's one that, given that Egypt's regime has always had the bad blood with the Muslim Brotherhood, and so it's a natural, involvement.
They've had the better luck, in the sense they got rid of the Brotherhood in 2014, and those tensions remain. Brotherhood in 2014, and those tensions remain. I think the internal Egyptian issues also force, or at least in Haftar's eyes, force him to keep a strong hand against the Muslim Brotherhood in Tripoli. But then other phenomena around which international forces are, is the so-called ISIS threat.
Yes.
in Egypt. The ISIS is a convenient excuse and a convenient magnet everywhere. And
yes.
Now the new constant in Libya. Now, credible is this ISIS threat in Libya? I don't know. I think any number of people in Libya can call themselves ISIS these days,
yes,
without necessarily having any connection to the original ISIS, which is was something that emerged first of all in Iraq in response to the invasion of Iraq in the years after that invasion in 2003, and then expanded to Syria. So that's the original ISIS. I think in Libya is some kind of
state, and there's got to be some little more powerful groups out there that are sort of using Islamic State as a proxy,
as a proxy and as an excuse.
Yes, both. Eventually, both.
Yeah.
Eventually, both. Now,
and as an excuse.
Yes, both. Eventually, both.
Yeah.
Eventually, both. Now.
Yeah, because that will be the excuse. The ISIS threat, it will be will remain there, and it'll serve as the for potential future interventions in case nothing happens in Libya.
That's correct.
In case nothing happens in Libya.
That's correct.
To resolve the situation, I think ISIS will be the necessary trigger.
I think
there is a convenient exploitation of this threat in the West, because in fact, it's no bigger threat than it was before.
Yeah.
That when it was called.
Both are there. I mean, Al Qaeda is there, and that's they are sort of enemy brothers at the same time, right? I mean, to me the big question mark is what's the American angle? To me the big question mark is what's the American angle to this? At least politically, it's very difficult to understand what the U.S. government is thinking, given its own turmoil. Right. On the other hand, it's very clear that anything that is a bullseye for the American military, and obviously there still are, chasing after Al Qaeda in the region. And recently, I think last month, as I said earlier, they killed 11 suspected militants. That is the American, the Americans. So, and I think if I were to understand what they're doing now, if you were to ask me to analyze it, I would say, you know what, they're just letting the French and the Italians try to sort it out. And everybody
that
else,
would
by
be
the way.
Their best.
Yes. And everybody else, by the way. Everyone, virtually everyone, with the exception of Russia, and I think Russia is the only one that's going to force the Americans to make a move. But everyone that's involved in the Libyan affair is an ally of the United States. The French, the Italians, obviously, naturally. Qatar, the biggest military base in the Gulf, is in Qatar. Saudi Arabia, naturally.
Arabia.
Turkey, naturally.
But this is what we have. They're all allies of the United States, but between each other there are rivalries.
Yes, and they use
we
Libya
have
essentially
Arabia,
to fight
each other. There are rivalries.
Yes, and they use
we
Libya essentially
Arabia,
to fight as a proxy.
So the proxies are fighting each other and have different interests and different designs.
Yeah, so
and none of them have really Libya at heart. Libya's interest, the Libyan people. At heart.
No, and that's the vice of the states. I mean, the states really don't care about people; they care about their own interests, and that's fair enough. And I think the Libyans ought to understand that. The problem is the leadership of the leadership in Libya is very weak. There's really no leaders per se, and that's the big problem.
I think Haftar holds most of the cards. Because Haftar...
Do you think so? Do you think he does?
For example... Yeah, I think at the conference in Palermo, everyone was watching, not Sarraj. They knew Sarraj was going to be there. Sarraj had an interest in being... Everyone was watching whether or not Haftar would show up. And they were watching who he spoke to and for how long and who eyes were on Haftar's moves. I think Haftar came to the conference also under Russian pressure. Before the meeting in Palermo, the Italian prime minister visited Moscow, inviting even Putin to...
And eventually that's probably the biggest concern of the Pentagon, more than the White House, obviously.
Yes.
The Pentagon is a lot more concerned about the Russian meddling or potential meddling. The Russians haven't been super active, but they could. I mean, they could decide to do something, and
And they were once very active in Libya during the Soviet days.
Right.
And in fact, I think it's this if the Americans and let the Europeans, particularly France and Italy, deal with Russia on this issue, I think something might move.
Yes, it's possible, but I am very skeptical as to what's likely to happen to Libya next year. I think it's going to be the same old profile in general. And you know, we haven't really talked. I mean, there's also the presence of Chadian rebels in the south.
We haven't talked about Chad.
We haven't talked about the south. While the south remains a no man's land for quote unquote Libyan authorities, which they don't. I don't know which authorities we're talking about. But anyway, let's you can assume that the Libyan National Army controlled by Haftar is sort of the de facto national defense structure. They can't control
it's the
it
only
either.
One that has an air force.
That's correct. But they can't control what's going on in the south, where, for the listeners who may not be a number of Chad rebels who really want to get rid of the regime in N'Djamena, the capital of Chad. And they are using basically the southern Libya as a base to train, et cetera, et cetera. And it's turmoil. That's right.
When Gaddafi was going after Chad, getting into trouble with France, by the way. One of the sad things that when Gaddafi departed this world is that we never learned many of his secrets. Involved starting Chad to the related bombings of jetliners, the UTA and Pan Am 103.
Yes.
I think there was I often think many people wanted him dead, and those people were not necessary in Libya.
Yeah, although I think he took full responsibility as part of an international deal to return to...
He did, but when I was there to have questions.
Yeah, it was absolutely. I mean, sometimes you have to agree with things politically because it's politically required.
Yeah.
Your point is you need to fill in the blanks in the history books. What really has happened?
Yeah.
And that's the big question. So, okay, so we are reaching the end of 2018. If you were to guess for 2019, are you in the Libyan next year or you're
in
thinking,
Libya?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, completely. Yeah,
completely skeptical.
I will be happily surprised.
Okay.
Yeah, I will be happily surprised if certainly I don't think elections will fix the problem. Government problem isn't that is just one of the problems. This is something that emerged in about 2 or 3 years issue. Even before there was one government, it was a disaster. So they haven't. This is just one step to getting the to finding that glue again.
Yes, yes.
So
I
see also who wins.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Libya needs one voice and one voice only. In the form of a charismatic person that could lead the country to negotiate an easing of interventions of all of these foreign powers. From Egypt to the east, Algeria to the west, Chad the problem south, to the north the Europeans that are dealing with their own issues, the murky involvement of the Turks and the Gulf countries, all the way to really what is the end game for the U.S. and Russia. As long as we have these, and we really haven't talked about the Brits, about the Germans, about everybody else, essentially, that has interest, militarily, economically, you name it. And with that, and until we meet next time, thank you for listening and happy holidays. Thank you.